Architects, designers, and planners, dedicated to distinctive projects for higher education, lifestyle, and cultural clients. On the web at www.ratioarchitects.com. Programs on WILL are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. The coming weeks feature the Emerson and Pacifica Quartets in concert together, the Munich Symphony with pianist, soloist, and conductor Philippe Entremont, and a club-style performance by the Hip String Quartet Ethel. For more information, contact the Krannert Center ticket office at 217-333-6280 or visit krannertcenter.com.
Good afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Rita Schulte, and I'm sitting in for Celeste Quinn. Our producer this afternoon is Martha Deal. Our technical director is Jason Croft. Today, our subject is antiques, and in the studio with me are Barbara and Matthew Peckham, antique appraisers and owners of Peckham Estate Sales and Appraisers. I want to remind you that our phone numbers, 333-9455 local, and 1-800-222-9455 toll-free are open and waiting for your calls this afternoon. We encourage you to call in and speak with our guests. Welcome, Barbara and Matthew.
Hello.
Thank you very much.
Nice to have you here. It's been a while since we've enjoyed your company.
Yes, it has been.
Yeah, we've been busy.
Yeah, I understand. It's been a busy few months out there.
Yeah.
It most definitely has.
Yeah. One of the questions that had that I had been wondering about, having done a couple of visits to New Orleans, and I know that it's a huge supply chain. There's a number of people trade in antiques, trade in art.
Right.
There are a number of very old American collections down there. What kind of impact are they expecting that this mess with the hurricanes is occurring? Is this going, how much damage, has anybody got any estimate yet?
Well, I do know that we have a friend, Chris Hill, who has a shop in New Orleans, and he said there was minimal damage to his antique shop. Okay. So, but I do not know what has transpired with the other shops.
Wow.
Or, you know.
Because I'm somewhat unfamiliar with the intimate details of the lay of the land down there, but I know that there are a number of old plantations along that general area, and I when I saw some of the devastation that was occurring, I'm wondering just how much we've lost or will have lost from just the cultural aspect.
Yeah.
You know, aside from the loss of life, which is tragic, and the damage to the economy.
Absolutely.
That there's a cultural loss as well.
Well, there's the whole Royal Street section, which has some very Tony dealers. I think that that didn't have as much damage as other areas. But there's some auction houses down there, and they tend to sell very ornate, large pieces for the antebellum homes down there because people are trying to fill those homes with period antiques.
Right.
So, but water damage can be, you know, devastating to an antique dealer.
Oh, I can only imagine. Somebody had a silly question that we were talking about in the office, and it suddenly occurred to me that it's really not so silly. A number of people are trading collectibles and things that they believe are antiques on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
And aside from any kind of business ramifications, there's also a how do you know what the provenance on some of those articles would be? Is that something that people should pay close attention to when they're looking at a swap online like that?
They're actually swapping things or just buying things?
Basically buying.
Well, provenance is important for certain things in the antique world, and certain things it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. The piece is what it is, and if you enjoy that and collect it, buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Provenance is important for paintings to establish their authenticity and their right of ownership. So many things were stolen in World War II. I know recently there was a painting that had come up that they found on an art loss register and had to be returned to the owners. So provenance is important for some things. People are certainly interested in provenance mm-hmm. if you have any information. Mm-hmm. And you can contact the person that's selling the item on eBay and ask them if they mm-hmm. have any provenance.
So what have you folks been up to, though? I mean, what's
well,
going
we
on?
Well, we've had here? So many sales mm-hmm. in this last couple of months, mm-hmm. just, you know, one after another. Mm-hmm. So it's – and then Matthew has a sale coming up this weekend, too. So
yeah, I'm selling a guitar collection of a gentleman. There's 17 instruments, and so it's not our typical thing, but something I kind of specialize in. I have a large guitar collection of my own, so it's something I kind of specialize in.
That's amazingly timely with Krannert's wall-to-wall.
Well, we just had a sale each week for the past 2 weeks, and, you know, we needed a break, but I thought, let's do this in conjunction with mm-hmm. that because of that great festival going on.
Right.
I mean, we're so lucky to have a facility like that in this town.
Yeah.
You know, it's just
we
fantastic.
Are very fortunate yeah. With the University of Illinois facilities.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we want to encourage you. We have two wonderful experts here in the studio, and we want to encourage your phone calls, 333-9455. I know for a fact that the interest in collectibles and antiques is growing. We see that just in the ratings for our companion television station with the Antiques Roadshow. It's probably one of the most popular programs right now that we have on the air. People can't get enough.
Yeah.
Of art and antiques and right. collectibles, and there's a tremendous amount of curiosity. Is this thing in Grandma's attic
mm-hmm. right.
Valuable, or what is this thing in Grandma's attic?
Yeah.
And even this old house, they'll have a gadget that they'll say, okay, they've got their, what is this segment mm-hmm. on this antique?
You know, what is this tool?
Everywhere, yeah. And it's so much fun. There's so much excitement that people have about their history and about antiques. And I want to encourage you to call in. We have a wonderful resource here that if you've got a question about estate sales, antiques, antiquing, collectibles, please give us a call, 333-9455 or toll-free 1-800-222-9455. Jason is signaling we have a caller on line 4. Go ahead, caller.
Hello.
Hello.
I was wondering if you know of a, I guess I'd call it a clearinghouse, but to be a buyer, I have a large number of I cups, a collection. Some are generally available on eBay with not too much expense, and some I've got some Limoges I cups, for example, which usually go for as much as $200 to $250 on eBay.
All right.
I'm really not interested in, you know, taking the time, mainly because of impaired vision, to do things on eBay, and I was hoping you might know of a person or persons or a contact for somebody who might be interested in buying the entire iCup collection, you know, at a wholesale level.
Well, actually, I think that Joy and Rob Luke in Bloomington do actually buy.
This is in Bloomington,
yes,
Illinois.
Right.
See, we have a Bloomington, Indiana also.
Yes,
yes,
where the
I
university's
know.
Located. And could you spell their name slowly for me?
Yes, it is it would be Joy Luke, J-O-Y-L-U-K-E.
L-U-K-E, Luke, okay.
Right. And I may even have their...
They're auctioneers in Bloomington, Illinois.
Okay.
And is there actually an iCup Collectors Society?
No, I did not. Let me put that out.
Well, I don't know if there is one.
Oh,
I'm just saying.
No, I don't think so. There, one time they even had a small newsletter, but it didn't last too long.
Yeah.
And I'm familiar with a couple of – there's a doctor in Florida, for example, it sells a small number of things, but mm-hmm. he's not interested in buying a large number at wholesale.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to find somebody that can, you know, say, well, I'll give you X dollars for that entire collection, you know, after I've sent them information, and then they know who to contact to sell certain, you know, prized objects and
sure.
others they could, you know, get rid of.
I don't know if all of our listeners know what an iCup is, and I believe they're the eye cups that you use to rinse out your eye.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I don't know if everybody...
The British call them eye baths
uh-huh.
and eye wash.
Right.
And normally in the United States, we call them eye cups.
Yeah.
Sometimes with a separate two words and sometimes a word together.
Right.
So it's just one of those deals.
But I would look online and see if there is a collector's club, because that's really the best way to get them to people who really want them. The internet certainly is a good way, especially for something obscure and collectible like that.
Yeah.
I think the internet is for those type of things, for the obscure, for the item that you have to get to a specific collector. I think that's what the internet's really good for.
Okay.
General things, I think, can be sold locally, but something specific like that.
And this person's name was Joy Luke, L-U-K-E, and they're auctioneers in Bloomington, Illinois.
Right.
Yes, sir.
And do you have any other information? You don't have the address or anything like that?
Unfortunately, I do in our gallery.
Uh-huh.
And
they're in the phone book, I believe, Mother.
Yeah, they're also online, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay, do you know under hername.com or something like that?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Joyluke.com.
Okay, well, I'll try that and try to reach him, because this comes down to it. It's just, you know, I'm not interested in really making, you know, money or anything like that. I just want to, it's time to get rid of them, maybe somebody can move them, you know, can make some use of them, make some money, and make some other people happy.
That's it. I think we all need to do that.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks a lot. Really
appreciate
that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we have a caller on line number one from Danville. Hello.
Hello. I have a carriage blanket that was purchased by my father in 1907, and it's 4 feet long by 5 feet wide, and the background is black, and it has about a 6-inch border of roses with silver colored horseshoes around the edge, and in the center is a light gray horse's head and withers and a glass eye. And I wrote the Kentucky Horse Museum about 3 months ago, sent them a picture. I wanted to donate it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't even had the courtesy of a reply. And so I'm
wondering,
A, what its value would be, and B, what other kind of institution might be interested in having it, because it's in beautiful condition.
You say it has a glass eye mounted into the fabric?
Uh-huh. And I think, as prickly as it is, I only recall it being used once in my 77-year lifetime, and that was about in early 32 when we took a car trip, and it feels kind of prickly. It is, and I suppose it's made of horsehair rather than wool.
I don't know what they were made out of, but they're very thick,
and
it is a very prickly, and I think that's kind of, adds to the whole, it's the sensation of it pricking you is what kind of stimulates you to be warm, too.
Oh, I
yeah.
See. Well, really?
But they are very, it's like a mohair kind of or something. It's very bristly.
Yeah, it is quite heavy and thick. And the picture was as it was draped over a piano bench to show the horse's head. And,
neat.
And I had asked at least for the picture back, but I, pooey on him.
Well, it sounds beautiful. It sounds like a very nice one. Even the simple ones bring a couple $100s, and this one sounds like it'd be, $300-$400 maybe. You could certainly put it in a horse related auction or something, or if you wanted to donate it to someone, maybe there is another a lesser museum. I know a lot of museums get tons of things donated to them, and they can't possibly absorb it all,
Well, the way I worded, I knew that the last time I was down there, they were building a new carriage horse building.
Museum?
It's all part of the big entity.
Yeah.
And the way I worded the letter was that if they felt this could add to their collection and they would care for it properly, then I would be pleased to donate it. And other than that, I have no objection to selling it, but I did want it to go where it could be of best value.
Well, there is Mr. Hannigan in Gifford. Gordy Hannigan is a local auctioneer, and he has a huge sale barn out near Gifford. And they have horse shows there, and they have horse auctions too, I believe. They have rodeos. I mean, it is a really fantastic facility and top-rated. He might do a particular horse tack or horse auction, and something like that it might go very well in. And
now,
if not,
his name is Hannigan, H-A-N-N-I-G-A-N?
Yes, ma'am.
And his first name is Gary?
Gordon.
Gordon.
Oh, Gordon.
Yes, ma'am.
Gordon Hannigan in Gifford, Illinois.
Yeah. And why don't we give it to someone in Illinois instead of Kentucky?
Since they were so snarky about not getting back.
Maybe there's
my grandfather paid for it, and he was born in Kentucky, so I thought.
Well, that'd be nice, and that's certainly our horse state. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've got Mr. Hannigan here, and he's very well respected. I know that.
Well, I knew people with saddle horses, but I certainly didn't know of anyone who showed carriage horses.
Or somebody with the people that have the antique carriages. They'd love to have an accessory like that.
Yeah, I would think so.
It's part of our history.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, I thank you for your information.
Sure.
And hope I can find a good home for it.
I hope you can, too. Good luck.
Thank you.
And the gentleman, I hope he is still listening, Joy Luke, Fine Arts Brokers and Auctioneers, and their phone number is area code 309-829-2266. And again, I hope you're still listening.
I want to remind you our phone number is 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We're here in the studio today with Barbara and Matthew Peckham. They are antique appraisers and owner of Peckham Estate Sales and Appraisers here in Champaign-Urbana. I was taken by the back to the guitar sale, not to beat it all up or anything, but I was reminded by somebody at the library that there will be a collection of Stradivarius. Also, they're not for sale. They're on tour.
Right.
Wow.
Which, it made me wonder about instruments,
mm-hmm.
old and classic and treasures that people have in their home. If it's likely that we're going to be seeing more and more of these on the market, particularly acoustical pieces, as people get more into electronic music. And
oh, yeah. Well, there's nothing that can, you can't, you know, really replace the sound of a real violin. I mean, certainly they can digitally sample it, but you can't, you know, all the nuances that an artist can convey on an instrument are incredible. And with a great instrument, it just adds to it. I know that at Techline in Champaign, which is a modern furniture store, and do cabinetry too. They're having a display of vintage instruments that starts tomorrow. And Saturday, maybe through Sunday.
Okay.
But when I was in London at the museum and in New York at the museum, I don't always go to the instrument collections because they're just incredible. All the different designs over history, you know, it's very, very interesting and they've been around a long time.
Yeah. We have another caller on line one in Urbana. Welcome.
Yes. Is this Barbara? This is Marion Martin.
Hello. Hello, Marion.
Hello. I was listening to the program, and it's really interesting. And I heard the man call in about the eyeglasses, the little eye cups.
Yes, right.
And I know that Dr. Gray, who does the cataract surgery at Carroll Hospital, has a collection, and he probably would be very interested.
Oh, wonderful.
But the gentleman didn't leave his telephone number, or I would have called him instead of bothering you.
Oh, well, no bother.
Did he leave his telephone number with you or WILL?
Unfortunately, he did not.
Well, that's what I thought.
Well, he might be listening. It's Dr. Gray, you say?
Dr. Gray, the surgeon who does the cataract surgery in the optical department.
Oh, is that at Carl?
It's at Carl.
At Carl.
All right.
Oh, wonderful.
And I think, I'm not sure what I'm saying because I know of another doctor, close friend, who is retiring, but I hope Dr. Gray hasn't retired or isn't retiring, but somebody could certainly get in touch with him.
That's
he has. And for your information, Barbara, he has a beautiful antique roll-top desk in his office.
Sounds good to me.
I know these are antique because my father had one, which I have. But I thought that gentleman would be interested to know that it's a good idea to go to Bloomington. I know what you're talking about. But
absolutely.
I think Dr. Gray might be very interested.
Great.
Thank you. That's a great suggestion. We appreciate your call this afternoon. We have another caller on line two in Champaign.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm not sure if you'd be the right people to talk to about this, but my parents have an arrow that was shot at my great-great-grandfather.
Wow.
By a Native American of Montana. And, I mean, it's an arrow. It's got a steel arrowhead on it, and the deflection's not very good anymore.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just wondering if you ever come across those and if you don't have any idea what kind of price those things bring.
Well, I think, I'm sure it has a value. There are people that collect Indian artifacts and Western artifacts. And but I don't know, being a steel tip, not knowing the age of it.
It's 1862.
Oh, neat. I've never, heard of one, seen one. You see all kinds of stone arrowheads.
Mm-hmm.
And they certainly have widely changing values.
Apparently, they made a lot of arrowheads out of old barrel hoops and that sort of thing.
Ah, okay. Well, I'm sure you could find a value, maybe even on the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
But really, the family history, don't you think, Mom, is what's...
Oh, no, we'd never sell it.
Yeah.
I think that's
really where the value lies,
It's the provenance.
Historically, and that's where, like you say, provenance is,
It's a true curiosity.
Absolutely. I think it's very interesting. Poor grandfather, but...
Oh, no, didn't get him.
Didn't get him, huh?
That's good. Unfortunately, they missed.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. I have a caller on line three in Camargo. Good afternoon.
Hello?
Hello, yes. You're on with Barbara and Matthew Peckham.
Well, I'm glad to be here. It's such a beautiful day.
it is.
We are settling my father's estate. He passed away in July, and we came across maybe 60 comic books from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and maybe 80 copies of original sheet music from the 1870s to about 1920.
Mm-hmm.
Where would I go to find a value on these?
Probably. Bookstore. A bookstore. There's a place on Main Street in downtown Champaign.
The old Main bookstore? Is that what you're thinking?
No. It's not.
There is Steve Kaiser at the Old Main Bookstore, mm-hmm. but there are price guides in Barnes & Noble and any of the big bookstore chains mm-hmm. for comic books. And what else was there? There was comic books and sheet music.
Maybe 80 pieces of original sheet
music.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And with anything paper, condition is the most important thing.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I mean, really to get the kind of prices that you see in price guides and such – and they'll tell you, it'll have gradings, good, fair, very good, excellent, whatever. Everything's graded differently. But paper stuff has to be in almost perfect shape for it to bring any kind of top money.
Okay.
And the first of any series of comic books, Batman, Superman, any of those, the first edition are the most collectible, certainly. The first five, say, So any of the first issuance of those is certainly the most collectible.
Well, I've done a mini inventory, and there are several first editions.
Mm-hmm.
Little Archie, I think I've got one from Batman,
mm-hmm.
Several of them, and they seem to be in what I call good shape.
Yeah.
Of course, that's an arbitrary judgment on me because I don't know them. So. But the sheet music, I don't have any way of knowing the condition.
Mm-hmm.
What I may do is just go ahead and take it to the University of Illinois mm-hmm. to their music department and kind of let them look at it.
Yeah.
If they would like it, I think I'll probably just do that.
Well, and with sheet music, the most collectible thing about antique sheet music or old sheet music is the artwork on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
There were some famous artists that did artwork at the turn of the century for sheet music, and their work, there's a gentleman named Armstrong, and his work is highly desirable. So it's really the art, if it's an Art Deco style or Art Nouveau style or like Mr. Armstrong's work, which was very colorful, that's what helps the value of sheet music.
Well, I appreciate your information, and you folks have a great day.
Thank you much.
You. We're here at the WILL studios with Barbara and Matthew Peckham of Peckham Estate Sales and Appraisers. I want to remind you our phone number to call in is 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. In the case of something like paper, when people have letters or they have sheet music or something along those lines, how important is it not to handle too much?
Oh, really?
What do you think?
Well, you know, to me, things like knives, guns, and delicate fabrics like silk, and the older, the less you want to handle them. I know those things you have to be very careful with. Paper, you certainly don't want to be, you know, sweating on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more knives, metal things, silk, things like that, I think, where, you know, if you don't notice that you've left a fingerprint on it, but 2 years later when you pull it out of the drawer and...
Mm-hmm. And the acid's in the fingerprint.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I was just sort of curious because you often see curators at museums with white gloves on, but they may just be white gloving everything.
Well, I'm sure that a paper conservator is going...
Yeah,
oh, no, you don't want to touch, you know.
Yeah, they're thinking paddles.
I do think. I know in our museum at the Cattle Bank, we have a vast collection across the street, and we do have to use gloves to handle the clothing. And so, you know, it's very important.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We have another call on line one from Champaign. Hello.
Hi. My grandmother left me an old Limoges China clock, a number of years ago, probably 25 years ago. And I've never been able to get a value on it. It's rather ornate with flowers in one of the Limoges patterns. And I have no idea what the value is. I've never run across anybody that did. Everybody remarks about it, but...
Mm-hmm.
Nobody seems to know what something like that might be worth.
Does it say Limoges on it?
Yes, it does.
It does. Okay.
And how big is it?
It is a mantle clock and would probably be about 10 to 10 inches across the bottom and probably probably 8 inches high, something like
that. Well, there are certainly collectors that collect Limoges now, mainly probably more things like china or figural pieces, you know.
Right. And this is a, you know, I'm sure it's some pattern.
They had a lot of patterns.
I know.
Yeah.
I can't recall it. I was just wondering if there was any value. It's probably... considering the amount of time she had it when I was growing up, it's probably a turn of the century.
I would think so, maybe a little earlier, but somewhere in there.
Yeah, it could be earlier.
What do you think, Mom?
Well,
these things you have to see, but most...
One is in really good shape.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the pattern is still very visible and that sort of thing, and
sure.
It works. You know, I use the clock in my home and keep it wound.
Yeah. What do you, Mom?
Well, I'll tell you, I wouldn't sell it for anything less than $1,200. I think an appraisal of about $1,200 would be appropriate for insurance purposes.
For replacement value, yeah. Now you might be able to find one for, you know, $400 to $600 somewhere at a sale, but you know, to replace that particular clock. You might have to do a little searching. You couldn't replace it as far as your being a family piece.
Right.
But if you had to, it might take some doing.
Oh, and I wanted to ask you one other question. She also left me a lady's pocket watch. You might remember that they were a little bit smaller than the man's watches.
Yes, always.
At one time. It is a brand called Fortuna. Which I've never heard of before, but it has very elaborate engraving.
Is it gold? Is it 14-karat gold?
Yes, it is. Solid gold.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because some of the watches at the turn of the century, too, they got away with marking them 14-karat gold, and it would say assay, 14-karat assay or something, and it's and it's just a gold filled. But it should just say 14-karat on it on the dust cover.
It says 14-karat on it, and then of course it has her. Mm-hmm. It actually has her grandmother's initials, so I don't know how far that goes back.
Yeah. They vary in value. Really, it's how ornate the engraving is and how good the condition the engraving is, because if it wears, it has a lot less value. If it has,
it's in almost like new condition. Mm-hmm. She kept it in a case, and I have done the same thing with it.
Mm-hmm. It could be a retailer, too, on the face. Often the watch was made by someone else and retailed by a jeweler, and they put their name on it. Mm-hmm. I just saw a watch from Olney, Illinois. It was called an Olney. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was made by someone else.
But, yeah, this was an old Kentucky family.
Yeah.
It was, I guess, one of the possessions they passed down through the family.
Is the maker's name on it?
The only thing I can see on the face is Fortuna, and there's some very, very tiny lettering. I probably need to get my magnifying glass out and take a close look at it. But I believe that it was made in England.
Oh, okay. Well, I would think $500 to $1,000, somewhere in there, depending on how ornate it is and the condition and how many jewels it is, you know. And watch collectors have so many variables that they're looking for. You know, this might be a desirable company or something.
It has such a thin face. Mm-hmm. When I first opened it and touched it, I cracked the face.
Yeah, they can be incredibly thin.
Really, really fine.
Yeah, sometimes they are.
Yeah.
Great. Well, we hope we helped you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, caller. We have another caller on line 4 from Mattoon. Hello?
Hello,
okay,
Mattoon.
Mattoon has not there. Try line 2, Urbana.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I just have some information. There's a new book out called Saving Stuff by Don Williams, who's a senior conservator of the Smithsonian. And it tells you what to do with everything. how you should handle it, what you need to preserve it. It's a lot more stuff than I would ever go through with anything that I own.
Sure.
But if you're wanting to, it tells you how to handle comic books. It's got sections on pop culture and fine art.
Right.
And it gives you lists of what you need to clean cast iron,
right,
organic solvent, safety glasses, nitrile gloves, 2 polyethylene squirt bottles, acetone alcohol. You know?
Yeah.
So
it sounds like something you really wouldn't want to do.
Yeah.
And I think I recognize this woman's voice.
Yeah. You've met me before.
Yes, indeed.
it's really well written, and it is available. It's published by Simon & Schuster. And I got mine within the last couple of months at Barnes & Noble.
Can you give us
anybody who has old stuff that you'd want to take care of, I think it would be the paperback, not terribly expensive.
Can you give us the author's name again?
Don Williams.
Don Williams, okay.
And Louisa Jagger, J-A-G-G-A-R.
Well, I think we all need to know, you know, how to take
preserve.
Care of our things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Better, you know?
Yeah. Most of the things that I've read are so
technical.
And this really is for people who are just out there with
stuff.
Grandma's underwear
right.
or something.
Well, I don't know how much we want that. But
depends on who grandma was.
That's it.
Right.
Yeah. Oh,
thank you for that
information. We appreciate it.
Thank you, caller. Our number again is 333-9455, 1-800-222-9455, toll free. That brings up an interesting point. We all have a lot of stuff.
And tell me about it.
Yeah. Yep, we're trying to clean out closets, and we're looking at this going, wow, we've collected all kinds of stuff.
Right.
And there are things in people's basements and attics and you were telling me a little earlier about, you know, just getting ready for an estate sale, the work that goes into some of that.
Unbelievable.
And while we wait for our next call, it might be an interesting, what's the process that you have to go through when you get ready to do an estate sale?
Well,
organizing it to start with and getting everything in order. Matthew does all the arranging, and I do most of the pricing. and our daughter works with us, and my husband works with us, and he is the gopher. He gets the, you know, the basement cleared and the garage cleared. It's a very timely process. It really is, and a lot of work goes into this.
We feel the you know, we do a lot of work that maybe some people wouldn't like organizing, but we feel that if you can get it organized so that people can get to it in a public manner, in a public sale, it has a lot better chance of selling. If you organize it into lots and batches and like things, they can tell, oh, okay, all the tools are here, all the books are here, all the whatever is here, all the kitchen implements are here. And you can bulk price it, you know, other than some of it. But we feel if you spend a lot of time getting it organized, it'll help sell it. And you basically kind of have to make a mess before you can get it nice and cleaned up and organized. You have to pull it all out, organize it all, then make it look look nice.
You know, and also another important bit of information is that works of art, paintings, sculpture, always bring much more than antiques.
Really?
Yes. And not only that, many, many years ago, at a conference I was at, there was a gentleman that is still in business, but he said, someday in your lifetime, there's going to be a piece of furniture that brings $1 million. And there have been, since then, there have been many pieces that have brought $1 million.
They just got a new auction record I just read about, Mom, for a piece of sculpture. And it was a Constantine Brancusi sculpture. He did these fantastic, very simple, elegant shapes. And this is kind of the prototype for all these that he did later on. But this one was done in the teens. It's very ultra-modern. You know, people must have thought, you know, what is this thing? And it was so modern for the time period. And it was found like in an attic in Paris or something, and it's... He usually did bronzes, but this was kind of the marble prototype in the teens for his later sculptures. And I can't remember what it brought, 27 million or something, but it's a new world record for sculpture.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, it's hasn't been seen since, you know.
Since somebody
bought
it in the
and
attic.
Put it up in their attic. But you had to be a pretty astute person, you know, to have a really rare piece of art or something very fine. You probably had to be pretty avant-garde at the time, whether it's furniture or art. For modern art, not everybody was buying Picasso's work or Miro's work, you know. It was, you had to be pretty hip and pretty in tune to what was, or lucky.
Absolutely.
Never underestimate the value of luck in some of the stuff. I was reading a number of, I guess maybe 2 or 3 years ago, it was in one of the news magazines, that somebody had found a piece of something that may or may not have been one of the Italian, great Italian bronze makers. I want to say Michelangelo, but it may not have been his. It was in a bird bath outside the embassy in Washington. I can remember taking the kids on vacation and walking back and forth from that spot. And here's this, and I remember the bird bath, and there's this little, you know, statue in there,
right?
And going back a couple of years after that announcement, and well, the little statue is no longer in the bird bath.
That's it.
The pigeons are not enjoying the art anymore.
Exactly.
It's moved on. Yeah. They're not splashing anywhere near. And it's just sort of like, well, you would have thought that when that was put together, that somebody would have taken a look at that and gone, wow, you know, maybe we ought to take another look at this before it ends up as, you know, birdbath material, because somebody thought it was too small for something else. And if people who are in the business of, you know, doing things with embassies can miss stuff, can you imagine?
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter how long you've been in this business. I don't care who you are, how long you've been in it. You can always make a mistake. Mm-hmm. That's why we're hired, is because we try desperately to go over things and go over it and go over it until you're sure. And we can't authenticate a rare piece of art.
No.
We can tell you, okay, if it's a Renoir or whatever, it's worth this, but you have to get it authenticated. Yeah. We can't do that.
You know, a week ago, last Tuesday, the University of Illinois Women's Club took a trip to the Toulouse-Lautrec show.
Oh, yeah.
And it was absolutely fantastic.
Really?
Just absolutely fantastic. It was just wonderful.
Well, his work is incredible. You know, he was way ahead of his time, too. Mm-hmm. And he took some of these artists took their inspiration from Japanese woodblock prints.
Mm-hmm.
You
yes.
know, the dark yes. edge of a Japanese woodblock print. That's why his work has this thick edge.
Mm-hmm.
To it. And other artists, too. Van Gogh, they all collected Japanese prints.
Well, the interesting thing was that his parents were first cousins.
Uh-huh.
And so he was an incredibly short.
Well, he had an accident or something, Mom, and broken his legs or something, I believe, too, to cause his kind of slight...
Well, I'd not heard that before.
Yeah, I thought that was...
Somebody had told me at one point that he also may have had, not spina bifida, but a curvature of the spine.
Oh, yeah?
From
yes.
the, his first parents cousin. Being cousins.
Ah,
that
okay.
He also, in addition to, I mean, it was a carriage, maybe a carriage accident?
Something like that,
I might
think,
be thinking
too.
Of the wrong artist.
No.
Our caller from Mattoon has resurfaced on line number 4. Welcome back.
Okay. I have a little Cupid doll, a little naked Cupid doll about 5 inches tall. And, you know, how the Cupid dolls are all fat. And it's, but it's made of rubber, and I've never seen a rubber one. I wonder what it might be worth.
Well, the Cupid doll was invented by Rose O'Neill, and it was a character like the Campbell's Kids or... You know, numerous caricatures of children and things that people did. And the rubber ones probably date into the – it depends on if it's rubber or celluloid. Celluloid's a very thin early plastic. If it's rubber, it probably dates into the 40s or 50s, I would think. And they were still making them. They've been popular. Rose O'Neill, you know, invented them in the teens or something, I believe. If it's – it could be by Ideal – or there was other furniture or other doll manufacturers that made copies of Cupids in the 40s and 50s. But if it's by Ideal or one of those companies, it's probably, maybe $65 to $125, somewhere in there, depending on its condition and who made it. The early bisque ones from the teens, the 20s, that are small, about 3 inches tall, that were – licensed by Rose O'Neill. Those are the really collectible China Cupid dolls.
I see.
But this one's probably from the 40s and 50s. I don't know if you're going to find a rubber one much earlier than that, maybe the 30s. But
Okay, then. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. Briefly, before we have to turn over to Todd Gleason for the settlements, tell us a little bit about the estate sale coming up, the guitars.
Yeah.
When will that be? And
That's this weekend from 10 to 5 on Saturday and Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's out in the Myra Ridge subdivision out Philo and Windsor Road. And it's kind of a collection of gentlemen amassed, and they're relatively new instruments, and he has guitar amps and high-end stereo equipment too. Mm-hmm. But they're classic instruments like Gibson Les Pauls and Stratocasters. And he has Gretsch guitars and Epiphones, you know, and they're all kind of classic instruments that all the great rock and rollers have used over the years. Mm-hmm. These are certainly new reproductions, but kind of a nice collection of classic instruments.
And how many are there?
17.
Wow.
Okay.
That's a nice collection.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming back. You're going to come back again sooner, I hope.
Let's do.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
We need to see you more frequently. It's delightful to have you around and about. And next time you'll be having an opportunity to speak with Celeste. I'm sure she'll be treasure the moment because it's great fun to talk to you. You're wonderfully fun and you obviously have great passion for the subject. And we hope our callers have enjoyed calling in, and I hope our listeners have enjoyed the program this afternoon. I want to remind our listeners that tomorrow on the Afternoon Magazine, Jeff Bossert will be interviewing Buzz Bissinger, whose recent book, Three Nights in August, Strategy, Heartbreak, and Joy Inside the Mind of a Manager, will be our subject tomorrow at the 1 o'clock hour. Settlement figures should be in from the Board of Trade. And before we go to Todd Gleason, I want to say one more time thank you to Barbara and Matthew Peckham from Peckham Estate Sales and Appraisers. So, Todd, are you there?
You bet.
Great. You're going to tell us what's up with the futures.
You've got to.
Excellent.
I will tell you all about the futures market, maybe more than you want to know. The highs, the lows, and the settlement prices coming your way, as they always do at this time, right here on WILL every business day of the week. Futures like this at the Chicago Board of Trade, soft red winter wheat, finished the day in the December contract with a high of 335.5. They're low at 330 and a quarter. Settlement price at $3.335. They were up 4 3/4 of a cent a bushel. The March contract at 348.5. High low at 343.5. Settlement there at 347.25. Up 4. And May futures 354.5. The high, the low at 351. Settlement price at $3.54. They were up 4.5 cents. July futures at 361. High, low at 357.5, and a settlement price of 359.75. They were up 3 3/4. September contract 367, the high, the low at 364.5. A settlement at $3.66 a bushel. They were up 4 cents for the September wheat. From the corn pit, a little bit of a gain there today as well, up about 0.25 cents. 204.75, the high, the low at 202.5. A settlement price at 203.5 for the December contract. That settlement price up 0.25. March futures up 0.5, 216.5. The settlement price 217.5. The high, the low at 215.5. May futures in the corn pit 225. The high, low at 223. Settlement price at 224. They were up 0.5. And July contract a penny higher, 230.75. The settlement price there, the high at 31.75. The low for the July at 229.75. September corn up 0.5 cent, 238.25. The high, the low at 36.75. A settlement price for next year's September contract at $2.37.25. They were up 0.5. And the December futures 247.25. The high, the low at 245.5. And a settlement price at 246. And that finished up 0.5 cent for the day. From the oat pit, nearby December contract, a 156 high, low at 154.5. Settlement price at 156. They were pinning 0.25 higher. The March oats, 163 the high, the low at 61.25. A settlement price there at $1.63. They were up 1.25. November soybeans, 567.5. The high, the low at $5.58. Settlement price at 560.5, down 2.25. In the January's, 576.5. The high, the low at 567.5. Settlement price at $5.70.25. They were down 2 cents. March futures in the bean pit, 584.5. The high, the low at 575.75. Settled $5.78.25. They were off 2 cents for the day. May futures down 2.25. 590.5. The high, the low at 581.25. Settlement price at 583.5. And they were down 2.25 for the day. July futures in the soybean pit, 594.5. The high, the low at 585.5. Settled at $5.88.5. They were off 2. And the August contract, 594.5, the high, the low at 584. Settlement price at $5.84.5. They were down 2.5. During the closing market report this afternoon, we'll talk with our regular Thursday analyst, Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. We'll take a look at that point at the quarterly grain stocks report, which is due out tomorrow morning from USDA at 7:30 a.m. Central Time. By the way, if you want to get your first look at that early in the morning and you're not out in the field at that time, you can subscribe to our AM 580 Ag newsletter or simply drop by our website. Both are kind of in the same place. If you go to the website, the numbers are already all there waiting to be filled in. It's WILL.UIUC.EDU. Just click on AM and then agriculture if you want those numbers to arrive in your email box, along with our weekend newsletter. Roll on down the page until you see subscribe. Just hit that. Should open an email that arrives in my box and in Dave Dickey's box. We'll get you signed up for that agricultural newsletter. Comes out every weekend. And, of course, tomorrow morning then, you'll see the newsletter in your email box with the numbers from USDA's Grain Stocks Report. Also tomorrow afternoon, the quarterly Hogs and Pigs Report due out. And we'll talk with our regular analyst, Mike Zuzulo, during the closing market report tomorrow afternoon about both of those sets of numbers. Dave Dickey, of course, in the morning to take a look at that grain stocks report at 8:50 for the first time in the morning. Now, the soybean meal numbers. October contract, 170.20, the high, the low at 166.20. Settlement price, 167.10. They were off 240 for the day. December futures, 172, the high, the low at 168.80, and a settlement price for the Dees meal at $170.20. They were down $1.70. October bean oil, 23, the high, the low at 22.42, settled at 22.42, up 13. And December futures, 23.26, the high, the low at 22.68, settlement price there at 22.68. And they were 17 higher. Coming up this afternoon yet in the closing market report, a couple of other things to tell you about. Peter Levitt is away. I talked to Daryl Good this morning about LDP in Peter's slot at the bottom of the hour, 2:32. We'll run that interview with Daryl Good. That all comes up during the closing market report this afternoon, not more than about 12 minutes away. Right now, here are the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
Thanks, Todd. Well, it was mostly an up day today. The only down contracts were September feeder cattle and February and April lean hogs. Well, let's start there with the feeder cattle for September. Like I said, it was down. The high price today is 116.07.5. The low 115.92.5. Settled at 116.05. That down 7.5. October feeder cattle, the high 115.22.5. The low 114.22.5. Settled at 115.17.5. Up 72.5. For November, 114.75 the high, 113.50 the low, settled at 114.67.5, that up 90. Moving on to lean cattle live cattle for October. High today, 88.45, low 87.30, settled at 88.42.5, up 130. For December, the high price today, 90.10, low 88.80, settled at 90.05, that up 132.5. Moving on to lean hogs for October, the high today 66.90, the low 65.95, settled at 66.80, up 85. For December, the high today 63.62.5, 63.10, the low, settled at 63.40, that up 30. February lean hogs, 65.30 the high, 64.90 the low, 65.05 the settlement, that down 10. And the other down contract, lean hogs for April, the high today 64.50, the low 64.15, settled at 64.47.5, that down 7.5. And pork bellies for February, the high today 91.75, the low 89.80, settled at 91.37.5, that up 152.5. And those are the prices from the Merck.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Morris at 815-941-3706. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Taking a quick look at what's happening on Wall Street, the Dow is up 60 points at 10,533. The NASDAQ is up about 18 points at 2133. And the S&P 500 is up about 9 points at 1225.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners. First Federal Savings Bank, Champaign and Urbana. Swire's Land and Management Company, Danville. Michael W. Walker Consulting, Urbana. And Weiskamp Screen Printing, Champaign. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.